Thanks for checking out this podcast. Remember, it's presented by Minnesota's very own Ticket King. If you're looking for tickets for an upcoming game or event at TCF Bank Stadium, Target Center, or XL Center, visit TicketKingOnline.com or the link from the 1500ESPN.com sports calendar page. Ticket King has all your tickets for Minnesota baseball, plus all the concerts, all the theaters, and at all venues. And Ticket King can take care of you for out-of-town concerts, sporting events, and more. Call 612-341-4141 or visit TicketKingOnline.com.
This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
All right, this is episode 6, Case in Point. I am Dave Harrigan, Jeff O'Brien here with me as always. Jeff, today, interesting topic. A lot of people probably saw in the news, about a month ago, a couple weeks ago, Mark Sanchez, along with some other people, including Jake Peavy, Roy Oswalt, were part of this. They got hosed, basically.
Yes, they did.
They got hosed. And we're going to be talking about that along with some other questionable deals that athletes have become a part of. And haven't worked out for them, and exactly what they can do, what athletes can do, and what anyone can do to stop themselves from being scammed, basically. So let's start with the Sanchez example. What exactly went down there, and some other examples. We just before the show here we talked about Terrell Owens, and then even one that came up today with Danny Woodhead and a few other NFL players being part of a scam. What can you tell me about the Sanchez?
Well, Dave, with the Sanchez story, you're right. It involved Sanchez, Jake Peavy, and Roy Oswalt. They had an advisor that, the story was, it played on their Christian faith. He had kind of got into their inner circle, won their confidence and trust.
A member of Sanchez's church, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah. And convinced them to invest, I think that all told it was $30 million. I think Sanchez was about $7 million. I didn't see specifically PV and Oswalt, but it's, in the aggregate, it was $30 million into a company that was, unbeknownst to them, in distress.
It's and failing,
it was a Ponzi scheme. Ponzi schemes, of course, are, they have, in order to keep them going, the most famous one is, as of late, is the Bernie Madoff debacle from a few years ago. But a Ponzi scheme is where you're bringing new money in and paying it to the earliest investors and cashing them out, and you have to keep finding new people to dupe to bring into the scheme to keep the whole thing going. And inevitably something happens where you can't keep it going, and that's when the house of cards falls and you're found out, and then the SEC gets involved and people go to jail. So that's what happened here. You had mentioned that the Danny Woodhead story, that there's been, they got duped as well.
Yeah, by a company that didn't even exist. Some guy claiming he was putting money into a horse racing operation that wasn't. It wasn't anything. He was just made it up out of thin air and was laundering the money.
Yep. And we've seen this in the past too, Dave, in some cases where even the agents are involved in steering these guys. They get the agents maybe get a too cozy of a relationship with an advisor and start pushing their clients towards investments. A few years back, Terrell Owens sued Drew Rosenhaus, alleging that, and I believe eventually Drew Rosenhaus may have been subject to some discipline, because Terrell Owens wasn't the only one that went into a casino investment that went bad. But you see this a lot, and unfortunately you do see, some of these folks out there prey on athletes because they do get large sums of money in a short period of time, whether it be the childhood friends, the inner circle, kind of playing on the heartstrings, on the guilt of taking maybe taking care of them, or someone else just comes to them with some wild idea promising high rates of return. And the bottom line, Dave, is, you know, there is no high reward, low risk investment. And that's what I want to talk about here today, is the benefit of having, whether you be an athlete or just people like you and I, having a team of advisors around you to, when these types of investment proposals or deals come up, being able to have competent professional advice as to the cost benefit of the proposed mm-hmm. deal. I mean, I've seen this a lot with the athlete clients that I represent. They're getting pitched on stuff all the time. And I've been invited to sit in on the meetings oftentimes, to listen to the pitch, and after it, we'll go sit someplace else privately, and I'll say, I don't think this is a good deal, and you know, that applies whether you're an athlete or not. You need to, everybody talks about my profession, expensive to have a business lawyer on call, but I can't tell you how many times that, you know, my being involved at the outset to structure something properly, to draft contracts, to do all these things, has saved my clients money in the long term.
Yeah.
And that applies equally to an accountant. Some financial advisors are fee-based. A lot of them are just commission-based. But, you have to know what business you're involved in and who you need around you to be able to give you the competent advice. Because as I always say, DIY oftentimes leads to SOL. And I much rather prefer to help a client negotiate a good deal up front than try to clean up a mess on the back end.
Yeah, and I know you do represent, I should say, a lot of former athletes. Carl Eller, I know you've... Tommy Kramer, among others. And you said you've sat in on some of these pitch meetings. I'm curious, can you share any of the pitches, either good or bad, that you've heard? I mean, just how ridiculous can it be sometimes?
Well, I mean, it's usually somebody, and I don't want to name a specific product or service, but it's usually somebody wanting to use my client's personal brand to further whatever product or service that they are selling.
And I imagine if you have a purple people eater that you can have pitch your product, that's huge for you, especially in Minnesota.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I have a good relationship with the guys I work with. And they, you know, you have that trust factor, and they come to me with these ideas. And that's, you know, in their case, the specific issue is usually the intellectual property. And, I wrote an article with Carl Eller just here recently for Hennepin Lawyer magazine. I joked with Carl, I said, I think you're probably the second purple people to be featured in that magazine. We talked about the issues of representing retired athletes, and we talk about trademark intellectual property, but we also talk in there about, Carl just did a college course over at the University of Minnesota that was organized between himself, the U of M, and the NFL. This is something Carl had planned for 2 decades. He had authored the materials himself. Mm-hmm. As we have, gone forth with this course, we have really one essential task as his business lawyers: make damn sure that the intellectual property stays with him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one concrete example. Anytime we have an athlete, that's one of the biggest issues is, you know, they have rights of publicity. They have trademark rights. They have copyrights if they're writing something. Making sure that they control the exploitation of their own intellectual property, of the brand that they've established, and not finding yourself in a situation where someone else now has control of it. I mean, there's been lawsuits fought over this. At the NFL level, there was a lawsuit brought, a class action brought against the NFL and NFL Films by the Players Association. The NFL has done very well for itself selling video of the glory days of the NFL. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, the players, back in that time, long before the NFL really became the business that it is today, didn't necessarily provide for the players to have, let's say the negotiations weren't exactly even handed as to those rights back in those times. So as a result, you have generations of athletes that don't benefit from, they don't see a penny, or they see a, just maybe a few pennies, where the NFL sees, you know, billions of dollars from video footage of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's not just, you know, for an athlete. A business that has high interest intellectual property, it could be a technology company or something like that. Some of that develops an app for a phone, right? All those things, that becomes very crucial, and you have to fight those battles. Otherwise, if you lose your intellectual property rights, you're done. So that's the role that we play. And I always tell clients, you may go through a transaction one time. We may do this same transaction over and over and over and over again. Same thing with your accountant. You may have a tax situation. They may have seen it 16 times that week and can help you through it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a benefit in going to folks like myself that can help kind of guide you through those issues. And like I said, athletes aren't immune from all these issues, just like anybody else could get scammed in some sort of deal. I mean, everybody is out there trying to make a buck quick.
Oh, I would think athletes would be more susceptible. I mean, they're getting paid, especially nowadays when you're getting millions of dollars, you know, thrown at you in the form of a signing bonus.
Yep.
You know, you have to have probably people coming out of the woodwork, either somebody that you knew 20 years ago, or, you know, random guy who has some product he wants to pitch, or like we talk about with Mark Sanchez and some of the other examples that are just running a flat-out scam, but they know that you just got paid $7 million in the form of a check, and you might be looking to increase that, double it, whatever you think you can do with that money.
That's right. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, Dave, is the story of Marshawn Lynch. And I love this story so much that it came out after he retired that he had $49 million in the bank. Marshawn Lynch, on the day he retired from the Seahawks, had not spent a penny of his salary that he made in the NFL since the day he was drafted. He Beast Mode has a powerful brand, and he had in product endorsements and other things, and he lived off of his endorsement revenue throughout his career. And not only did he save up and have all this money, the story, as I understand it, is he was giving 401k investment advice to his teammates in the locker room.
That's outstanding.
And then it was shortly after that, Rob Gronkowski came out and said, I haven't spent any of my salary either. So I love that this is maybe hopefully the new trend. Instead of I have to have the most expensive car and the most of them and the biggest house, mm-hmm. how much of my salary, how much can I save? You know, if we can get that as the new culture of professional sports, as to how much they can save and invest as kind of the measure of the man. You know, we aren't going to see any more stories about athletes being broke or bankrupt.
Yeah, and then the entourage leaves and no one loves you anymore.
Right.
I have a question quick about, I mean, you represent Carl Eller. When it comes to the name Purple People Eaters,
mm-hmm.
is that a trademark name? And if so, how does that work when it's not just Carl, obviously, that would be a part of the group? You know, you got Alan Page, et cetera.
Yep.
How does something like that work?
Well, there isn't a trademark for it, and there's a lot of reasons for it. It's kind of beyond the scope of our show here today. But that name, Purple People Eaters, describes four individuals, arguably five individuals, because Doug Sutherland switched out for Gary Larson. But mainly, when you talk about Purple People Eaters, you think of Carl Eller, Alan Page, Jim Marshall, and Gary Larson.
Exactly.
So what those gentlemen have, and we've talked about this in previous shows, are rights of publicity. Okay, the name Purple People Eaters you associate with four distinct individuals. They created that brand. They created that, and we've had some issues where we've had to assert rights. But you're right. All four of those guys have rights into Purple People Eaters. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately. That goes back to that we talk about that classic era of the NFL, and before it was a business, it just it's kind of like the milk is spilled at this point. We do what we can when issues arise, protecting those rights for Carl and some of the others. We've done some stuff. We've had at one time we had an issue that we were able to help three of the four. Justice Page was still on the bench, so we didn't do anything with him, but the other three, we were helping them with something. But it's a different era now. I mean, you see a guy like Brett Favre. Brett Favre is probably one of the savviest guys in terms of controlling the sale and distribution of any branded or signed merchandise.
Oh, wow.
I've heard that he can fetch $300 a signature, another couple hundred for inscriptions. It's insane. But a lot of he has a certain kind of certificate of authenticity that if is not attached to the item, then its authenticity is questioned. Mm. And so if you run to if you catch Brett Favre running into a cab and have him quick sign your football card, a collector may question the legitimacy of that autograph if you try to put it on eBay or something.
Sure.
Because it doesn't come with that certificate attached. So I with a lot of my retired athlete clients, I point to Favre as a good model. And if you look at his name on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website, and I don't know how many different trademarks that he has for different goods and services related to his name, product endorsements, clothing, all sorts of things. Heinz Ward is another one that has a very good website, very good brand control. So, the guys are getting better as these leagues become more of about a business. The positive thing is the stories like Mark Sanchez, like Danny Woodhead, become rarer and rarer. Yes, they happen, but a lot of these guys are going back to school and getting, finishing degrees, getting MBAs. I've been at Les Pico, who is the Vikings director of player engagement. I've had a chance to meet with Les. Les keeps in his office a list of the players that have achieved or are in process of achieving an MBA. Mm. He's very proud of that. That wears it like a badge of honor. That's the kind of stuff that we want to see more of, where these guys are developing business savvy and out doing things other than risky investments. And it's not just Ponzi schemes, but, you've seen, too often you see an athlete, current or former, that decide to go into the restaurant business. Now, to quote my father-in-law, who has been in the food industry, the easiest way to wind up with a small fortune in the restaurant industry is to start with a large fortune. It is one of the riskier businesses because it's cyclical.
Yeah.
And as the economy ebbs and flows, so does that business. And so, but you see too often athletes, it's almost like an ego thing, right?
Yeah. Everyone's got to have a steakhouse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that some guys are doing them now that have taken a long time. They've looked at several deals and they finally decided that this one was the right one for them. And so, like I said, having somebody there to, if I'm doing a restaurant deal for an athlete client, I'm looking more at what's the experience of the group that's doing it. I hope you're not doing it because you don't have the experience to do a restaurant. License your name, get a royalty, stay out of the operation, mm-hmm. right? That would be my kind of how I would approach if someone ever approached one of my guys about doing a venture like that, right? So it's just a matter of having somebody to have your back, basically.
Yeah. So how does a former athlete or, everyday Joe Schmo – say they've got a buddy who wants them to invest in whatever it is. How do you go about getting representation like yourself or another attorney who can be in that meeting, who can give sound advice versus just going it alone and saying, yeah, I think that sounds like a decent idea. Let's go at it. Well, how do we go about getting the representation that actually has our back in that situation?
Well, it all depends on the league too. Like I mentioned, the NFL does a very good job, and the Vikings in particular. This is one area where the Vikings are really on their game with Mr. Pico as the director of player engagement. Very good guy, has is big on making sure that these guys are educated to the point where when they leave the game, it's a seamless transition. Not every team is that way, but the Vikings happen to be a good one. It's just a matter of word of mouth. Doing research. There's great Google's a great thing. Looking up business attorneys, we have Martindale Hubbell which is for lawyers, which is, you know, the, kind of the rating system. Okay. There's super lawyers lists. There's all sorts of things out there. But the big thing is whether you're an athlete or whether you're a non-athlete, do the research. As to, you know, and ask your friends. If you, if somebody that you know is a business owner, ask them who they use as their accountant, as their financial advisor, as their attorney. And, you know, and get some, and do the interviews. I mean, I talk to a lot of potential clients. I pride myself on having a pretty high conversion rate, but I don't get all of them. And there are people that call me and they want to meet with me and they just want to kick the tires to start out with. And it maybe takes some time before they call me back and say, okay, I'm going to go with you. Mm-hmm. I know I'm being auditioned, but you know, so that's just the way it is. That's somebody that's doing their research. That's somebody that has a good head on their shoulders that, and I think sometimes I try to fight for that business harder because I know that they're being a little bit more applying a little greater scrutiny to their choice of counsel. So, you know, talk to friends, talk to family, talk to coworkers, find out who's using whom, and do the research. And but you do have to have, regardless of what your profession is, you do have to have some basic level of business knowledge, and you know that could be an MBA program or something else, just to understand how you read financial statements. You know, what are the big issues when you have a business proposal? What's the difference between a letter of intent and a binding contract, right? So, and also to know when you bring the lawyer in. Or your accountant, and who needs to do what. And a lot of times the way I practice law, Dave, if I have someone that comes to me and let's say they don't have a real estate broker and they're maybe looking to lease space. Well, I have, you know, folks here's three guys you can go talk to. Sure. You don't have an accountant here. Here's some folks. Need insurance. Here's a guy for you. So I try to be kind of that role. I take it upon myself to be the captain of the team of advisors, and help using my connections to help my clients. Because as an attorney, I don't want to be giving tax advice and insurance advice and all this other kind of advice. I want to bring in the folks that have the expertise in those areas because I'm practicing what I preach.
Yeah. You're the expert in your lane.
Yeah.
But like you said, if you're going into something like, you know, any business venture, you have to have a insurance guy, you have to have an accountant, you have to have a financial advisor, you have to have, you know, maybe a real estate guy, but you say you're the captain, you want to be the guy in charge, basically delegating, all right, here's where you go with this issue, here's where you go with this issue, this one's mine, and so on and so forth.
Yep. And you have to have some knowledge of the issues. You know, I when we go to law school, what we do is a lot of issue spotting, right? We spot an issue and then try to solve it. Laws change over time, so there's very little stuff that I, you know, studied in law school that may still be pertinent today, but it's that skill of being able to spot the issue and figure out the solution to it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I've got a deal coming to me and someone, securities law is one of those where everybody misunderstands. You know, I'm not selling securities. I'm doing this. Like, have you ever looked at the definition of a security? It's about two paragraphs long and includes everything.
Yeah.
You know? And so we got to make sure that we're compliant with the federal and state securities laws, because you don't want to be doing unregistered sales of securities. You don't want to be committing securities fraud. I mean, the stories we see, I mean, Mark Sanchez and Roy Oswalt and Jake Peavy may ultimately recover something after spending a lot of money in court, and there's going to be an SEC action. Mm-hmm. So they may get, you know, some recovery of some amount, you know, percentage of what they invested. But whoever, you know, the advisor that led them into it is going to face heat now for and criminal charges likely from the SEC,
yeah,
and, you know, Securities and Exchange Commission. So, you know, you want to be able to have somebody in your corner that can identify those issues and fix them at the outset, so that you don't have a problem down the road.
Yeah, and as you said, spend a few pennies now, save dollars later, yeah. Right?
And we don't bite. I mean, that's the misunderstanding. You know, we attorneys don't bite. And I'm a transactional lawyer. I like working deals. I like having relationships with clients. And it's not about how much time I can sock into this file and how much money I can make off you. It's like, how do I accomplish what help you accomplish your objective. Mm-hmm. And that's what you know, you talk about, you know, in sports, scoring a touchdown or hitting a home run or, you know, making that winning free throw. for me, that's the adrenaline rush for me, is when you get a deal done for somebody and they're happy and you see them successful. That reflects well on me.
Well, there you have it, Jeff O'Brien from Lohman Abdul Law Firm. Before we go, Jeff, I got this idea for a steakhouse, Jeff O'Brien Steakhouse. What do you say? We'll slap your name up on the marquee. It'll be great.
I think I'll pass.
All right, fair enough. Well, I thought I'd give it a shot. This has been Case in Point, Episode 6. We'll do another one in a couple weeks. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you, Dave.